Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. We got a full studio today. Sitting across from me is...
We do have a full studio. Mike Cosentino here, the less than beloved, but somewhat frigid co-host of Democratic Perspective. Today is our annual show, Steve. You just made it back in the door. You are still fresh from California. Sunshine
and,
here.
And looking at elephant seals.
And look, elephant seals.
There's something
seals.
That elephant seals have to tell us about
American
politics.
Aren't those
politics.
Ones with like three penises or something?
I don't know, Mike. You know more about their penises than I do.
Topic for a different
show. And then we have Silent.
For a different show.
We have Silent Gary LeMaster.
Good morning, everyone.
Who's not going to be silent. And Dick Searle.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm here for once a year visit just to make your day.
That's right. Let's talk about our silent back, one of our silent backers.
Yeah. Yeah, who does all the work.
It does all the work, actually. Yeah. So we can be buffoons right here on the radio.
Yeah, Dick was a rocket scientist, and so he does all our accounts and stuff. That's it. I think it's probably a real challenge for him, but he manages to do it really well.
I just prove it doesn't take a rocket science to avoid the show.
Yeah. We want to talk about what happened this year.
Big stories of 2015.
And we want to talk about Mike's just... chomping at the bit. Mike wants to talk about what's going to be happening in 2016.
We do want to make predictions. We're going to look back and look forward here. It's what
so
we do.
Who wants to go first with a brilliant analysis of Gary LeMaster?
I'd love to go first. My story is both a 2015 and a
2016. Gary just took Mike's microphone away from him. Okay.
That's okay. This one works, right? It's on.
Right,
I'm on,
okay.
Right?
All right.
That's all I'm...
keep you under control here.
My story is a 2015 and 2016 story. It's the Cliven Bundy story of 2015, and which we had the standoff with the BLM, an arms standoff, and when Bundy refused to pay his grazing fees for like the last 20 plus years. And now his son has led the takeover of the I'm not sure quite how to pronounce it, the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in Oregon.
A federal building.
It's actually a gift shop.
A gift shop.
You know, they like to think of this as being a sagebrush rebellion. I think it's more of a gift shop rebellion.
I see.
My favorite, I was reading.
We cannot allow them to see. Our gift shops, Mike.
It's not the Bunker Hill Armory. It's the gift shop.
I was reading social media yesterday and today over this issue, and I think it's. I'm seldom a big fan of social media, but it's brilliant in this case, and so what they're doing is. On Twitter,
these white terrorists have taken over a government building and are refusing all kinds of nasty things about the government.
It's two of the Bundy children, Amon and Ryan.
Isn't it an armed insurrection?
Yes, they have all of their guns, and they've got at least two homosexuals from Arizona that have joined them, prepared to die for their cause. And
the cause is?
The cause is the federal government.
The federal government and their bully tactics.
Yeah, taking over all the land.
I see.
So anyway, on Twitter this morning, I was seeing they've dubbed them the Ya'al Qaeda.
Ya'al Qaeda.
And Vanilla ISIS.
Vanilla ISIS.
Yokel Haram. Al Shababa, and they claim that these people are waging jihad against the federal government, and the Bundys are saying we are not terrorists, you know, but
they are terrorists.
They're full patriots,
except in corporate media, they're not.
The one of the other things on Twitter was that. Well, of course, every successful revolution starts with the takeover of a closed visitor center with a gift shop.
Well, they are calling other like-minded patriots that dislike or are violent against the federal government. And big difference between disliking the federal government and taking up arms against the federal government.
Yeah, because if you dislike the federal government, you can always vote.
And these people,
you cannot pay your taxes or you can vote, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. You can write letters. You can do all sorts of things, like we do, by the way. You can get a radio show.
Most of the militias around the country have declined to join them. Even the Oath Keepers.
Why have they declined, Gary? Just they think it's too stupid.
Well, even the people that the Bundys are allegedly protecting, the father and son who were convicted of poaching a deer herd and then setting a fire on 100-plus acres to cover the evidence. Just a little background. If they were convicted, the father spent 3 months in jail, and the son spent, I think, a year in jail. And a federal judge has now ruled that it wasn't long enough. The sentences weren't long enough. So they're going back, I think, for a year and 3 years, respectively. So this whole thing began with the march in support of the father and son, and before they went back to prison. And the Bundys and their crowd joined the march, and then, the outcome was to take over this wildlife refuge. And even the people they were supporting and the other probably dozens of protesters in the march have disavowed any relationship with them. And what I think is interesting is these people call themselves patriots. They liken themselves to the Tea Party, the original Tea Party patriots and the founding fathers. Well, if they were treated the way the founding fathers treated the Whiskey Rebellion, when George Washington marched the army to, I forget, whatever town in upstate Pennsylvania.
George Washington wanted to hang them all for treason, right? And then people said, no, George, let's not do that. I mean, that's too violent. And so he changed his mind.
So if they really want to relive the days of the founding fathers, they'd probably end up dead. What I'm waiting for is when our Congressman Gosar and our legislator Bob Thorpe end up running to their side as they did with Cliven in Nevada. So.
Wow. So what's the federal government doing, Gary, about all this? Anything, or are they just hanging out?
I love this. What I've heard, they said, we are aware of the situation. You talk about a response that doesn't exactly get respect from, AR-15 toting terrorists.
Well, last year they should have taken the Bundys and prosecuted them after the fact. When the militias had had left and basically put down their guns, but they refused to do that because they didn't want the visibility of an armed insurrection. So it's apparent that's what they're going to do now, but I just look at this event as what would happen, if the people in Ferguson that were demonstrating after the killing of Michael Brown, who was unarmed, what if the protesters in Ferguson had been armed to the teeth like these people? What if the people in Baltimore had been done? I don't think the police and the government would have sat back and done nothing.
They'd have rolled in with their military-style stuff and squashed them. On the other hand, the strategy is brilliant, though. We don't want to be as short-sighted as they are, and that is by not giving them what they want, which is publicity.
Attention, yeah.
Which is attention. By not going in, guns blazing, FBI, whatever other domestic police forces the federal government has, is the only way to handle it, because the militias would rally to their side if the FBI goes in, guns blazing, and tanks and all this stuff, which I'm not sure isn't illegal, by the way. We have laws, we have constitutional protections against law enforcement of any kind attacking, military. Not law
we can't use they can't use the American military without the declaration of a state.
But they did use the National Guard in Ferguson.
National Guard is a little different thing. Mike has a whole list written in orange ink, and what do you want to talk about, Mike?
Well, do you
want to talk about the Bundys more, or you want to talk about something
else? There's a lot to talk about there. We'll move on. We can come back to it if you like. So we're trying to talk about the biggest stories of 2015, and everybody has their own list, but the first one I'm going to go to is a sort of a step back where two professors, one from Princeton, one from Northwestern, Gillens and Page, Martin Gillens and Benjamin Page, wrote their paper that the United States is no longer a democracy. And named it as an oligarchy. An oligarchy being, of course, where the wealthy have all the influence on government. Now, this is, some of the reactions are, yeah, so this is not exactly breaking news. Anyway, so these two professors write a paper that the U.S. is no longer democracy. Now, other people argue it's never been a democracy. When you say the Pledge of Allegiance, you pledge allegiance to the Republic, not to the democracy of the United States. So we are, as far as a form of government, it's been a republic. So we never were a democracy. We were a republic with democratic functioning.
Yeah, democracy in the ancient world in Athens didn't have any rules. So everybody in the
The black stones and the white stones, gets a little unwieldy when you got 350 million people.
Yeah, and also even that, there were no rules. There were no code of Hammurabi. So whatever you had, I mean, people could just simply get together and ban somebody they didn't like. Democracy was so fluid in Athens that it was a problem. So the response, at least by founding fathers and others, was to set up a system that responded with more structure. So there's a judiciary, so forth, and
officially
so on.
A democratic republic.
A democratic republic.
That's it. Now, I found this on Talking Points Memo, but you can find it kind of predictably all over the Internet. Calling the United States an oligarchy, they cite proofs, an oligarchy where the wealthy and corporations have much more influence than normal people. So
but they do, Mike.
It's
isn't
so hard to convince young people, so hard to convince people to vote, and this just makes it harder. They're saying, yeah. So really, the rich people and the Bushes and run everything. That's not news. So what is there anything to do about it?
What they showed statistically is when the very wealthy were in favor of a particular policy and the vast majority of people were against it, the policy got enacted anyway. And
right.
They showed this over and over,
over
for
and
decades.
Over again.
It's really, as much as it is an oligarchy, it's a corporatism. It's
that's a better name for it. Even the oligarchs.
And in reality, it actually meets the definition of fascism. I was looking up not long ago Mussolini's. I was comparing Mussolini with Trump, and because there's a lot of the same arrogance. Mussolini was actually quoted as saying fascism should more properly be called corporatism. That the corporate, entities and leaders should be running the country and
maybe,
the world.
They run the government and let the government run things.
Let's go to Dick and then let's talk about the Republican contest. You guys want to do that?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, I was looking at an article here from the Atlantic, and it's rather interesting. It's called The Great Republican Revolt, and it really has to do with what Donald Trump, in a way, has done us a favor, because even though he's pandering, so to speak, and talking about solutions which are impractical, he has roused people to the recognition or realizing their frustrations. The mainstream USA, the middle American, the average American, their situation after the Great Recession has not improved as much as the moneyed people. And basically, he's talking about corporate influence, as you're talking here. He's really talking about, in a way, an oligarchy. And he's pointed out a lot of problems. Now, he talks about the solutions, so to speak. They don't seem very practical, but the point of it is he has roused a lot of recognition in people that things aren't right. For instance, you'll see suggestions for solving the immigration problem. Main Street Republicans aren't too happy because they figure that's going to reduce their job opportunities. That's going to impact them economically. And so now we have the elite running
government. Immigration, folks, is usually and almost always an economic plus. Yeah. More people buying more stuff, working at more jobs. Mm-hmm. It's a plus. And one reason why it's gotten very bad in Europe. But one reason why the Europeans were not totally against it is that it brings in a lot of fresh energy into a country.
Well, I think that's been true as far as the United States up to the present time, and it probably is still true in a way. But nowadays, it depends a lot on how the press covers these things and what gets all of the time in the social media and so forth.
The immigration from Mexico and Central America, I was looking up just yesterday. I don't remember the numbers, but its benefit to our economy is in the tens of billions of dollars.
Without a doubt, Arizona benefits, as all the border states do, primarily from it. And so nobody could understand things like SB 1070 that was a slap in the face to immigrants, especially South America.
Well, that was another example of corporatism, because SB 1070 was strictly a way for was created by Russell Pierce and others as a way for private prisons to make hundreds of millions of dollars off of incarcerating immigrants.
I want to mention too the idea of voodoo economics or trickle down economics. They've been foisting that on the American people since Reagan, and it hasn't paid off. Bona fide economists from all over agree that it doesn't pay off yet.
Exactly, Dick. Study after study,
People are beginning to realize that they aren't getting their piece of the pie.
It's been disproven since the 1800s.
All right. So the point of it is that sort of gets tamped down as far as in what you read in the newspapers.
People are. If you look at the objective economic figures, the country is now doing pretty well. It's emerged from the recession a long time ago. The unemployment rate is about 5%.
Parts of it's doing well. They call it the people who have the money are doing well.
Right.
Exception
That's
for
the
this
problem.
Year. The mainstream USA, they are not doing better. They have not recovered.
Right.
And that's what people are – and that's what we can
so
thank Trump for
economy,
that.
Even though the economy has been getting better and better and better – the vast majority of people have not benefited from
it. Yeah, look at the people who are making the money.
In particular, the people that feel they haven't benefited are middle-aged white males in particular.
Yeah.
That, there's a recent study out that they are killing themselves, from suicide and just, poor health behavior over the last, 20 years in increasing numbers. Their longevity the longevity of middle-aged white people is dropping while everybody else's is increasing because they're frustrated at what's going on.
Let me ask you this, Gary. The crime rate's been going down and down. There's a little bit of an increase in some cities this last year, but it's been going down and down, and yet the fear of crime has been going up and up. What's going on, do you think?
I think that's media. I mean, that's... it's really easy to whip up that kind of fear, and fear motivates.
When you sell something, remember, you got the fear is one of the factors. You don't, everybody's doing it is another factor. The recommendation, the testimonial. And that fear is one of the big things. And so the propaganda that we've seen in our media has been influencing people.
As an ad guy, what I know from that is that emotion sells rather than logic.
Yeah.
And the biggest emotion, the emotion that gets the most reaction is fear.
Yeah. Somebody said that, you know, fear reduces intelligence by 50%.
Well,
there's some studies that kind of support that. Fear, if you're really afraid, you're not really functioning with your full deck.
Well, you say intelligence. What we really mean is rational thinking.
Right.
You don't have to be smart if you can think rationally. You know, and I think that is an important thing. Anyway, I thank Trump for, you know, stirring the pot, because maybe it'll get through what's really happening.
Well, politically speaking, the other big story of 2015, and that straddles the date to 2016, is Bernie Sanders politically. And this is once again implicates media that he's doing so well. Every poll picks him double digits over Trump. No media will say, well, they'll talk about Trump. They'll talk about the people that want to be the next president or want to get the presidential nomination in the Republican Party. And they don't follow up like a good journalist should say, but would be beaten by Trump by Bernie Sanders by double digits and by at least 7% by Hillary Clinton in a general election. So that's got to be the other big story, is Bernie Sanders and the amount of money. It's all about money. I think Dick talked about that even Trump is as loathsome as he is to liberals, is finally collecting big money. And that's when you know people are on your side. He collected $33 million.
Bernie
Sanders is collecting lots of money. Has been from the beginning.
He's set records for the number of contributors to his campaign. Not the amounts, but the numbers.
But he's saying things that the part that Dix likes about what Trump is saying, Bernie Sanders is saying all that stuff better, and yet it's not reported and nobody talks about it.
But Trump is getting people to think about the problems they really have, even if his solutions are not solutions.
He has no solutions. You know, if you compare Sanders and Trump, Trump has offered no solutions. All he says is, just trust me, it'll be great.
Yeah, but you'll love it. Our problem is to get people to think about the real problems.
Yeah.
They've all been influenced by the propaganda that you get through the media, and the media itself is controlled by,
you know, Trump, for example, you know, has called most of the Mexican immigrants rapists and thugs, and yet he turns around and when he's confronted with that and says, but I deal with Mexican immigrants all the time, and they love me. Trust me, these people will vote for me. They love me. He has no substance.
I know, but don't mix up this personality issue with the other aspect.
Right. The issues.
What you have, when I look at the Republican primary, is some of the most reactive, violent responses to almost everything. You know, you have Trump's let's ban all Muslims. I mean, you have this furious anger and striking out that's spreading all through the Republican Party and being amplified to ordinary Republicans. Absolute fury and craziness. So if you try to argue rationally with someone like who believes you should ban all Muslims, you say, well, they're the second largest religion in the world, and there's 1.6 billion of them, or whatever it is. That's playing into ISIS's hand. That doesn't seem to matter, because what they want is this anger. The cruises will carpet bomb them. Nobody's carpet bombed in decades. It's basically murder. Who was it that wanted to kill their families? Trump wanted to kill their families. That's a war crime. You can't just, you know, guys in ISIS, you can't go murder his wife and kids, you know, deliberately murder them. So I've never seen the Republican Party, I guess back in the McCarthy period, that's a little before my time, but, you know, the what you read, this violent, this acting on a completely, on a level where reason doesn't seem to reach them. And so when I see Obama trying to talk to them about what he's doing and what his strategy is, I see it just overridden by this fury and anxiety and fear. So he's trying to say, well, we don't want to kill a bunch of civilians because that'll make us more enemies. He's saying, you know, we want to be careful what we want to do. We don't want to end up stuck in another. We can't get out of Iraq.
Well,
we can't get out of
Afghanistan. I want to do three other big stories of 2015, and I want to.
You can do just two.
Well, okay, try to stop me.
You only got 1,000 words.
Well, one of those is continuing. Why do people vote against their own self-interest? Time and time again. The Robert Reich on all over, we talk about somebody that knows how to use the web, the internet. Robert Reich has got video after video about the lies that people believe when it comes to healthcare, when it comes to jobs, when it comes to economics.
But they don't want to know the facts. I work with many guys. They don't care what the actual facts are.
They don't care
what Obamacare is. They have this, like, they hate the federal government, can't do anything right, and therefore Obamacare can't be any good. It goes on and on, Mike.
I was listening to Dick, it's getting people not to understand, but it's getting people to care. The other big story was obviously the militarization of police forces and the killing of young black people all over the country. The fact that we don't have any mechanism to count. This is insane. This is a country that counts everything. We have computers, and we have no idea how many of our own citizens the police are killing. Obviously, that would be the first step to solving the problem. I love and respect the police. If I need a cop, I want him there. But on the other hand, I believe, as in any endeavor, there are people who are not doing the job correctly. And the last story is local. APS runs the state of Arizona. There.
Here's a real mad Democrat.
Yeah,
a
mad
Going back.
I'm sorry, just reasonable and truthful, Dick. Just
going back to the militarization of the police, the Guardian is actually, the newspaper, The Guardian is actually.
Oh, yeah, the British newspaper?
tracking the number of police shootings and killings.
They are
in the U.S.
Statistics
and it's 1,140 for last year. And they say that they're going to continue to do it until the government starts tracking it. And of those, I don't remember the statistics exactly, but I believe it was like 900 of them were people that were shot that weren't armed with guns.
Right.
They either were unarmed or they were armed with knives and clubs.
Well, since
it's just totally unnecessary.
Since Bruce Springsteen's song "American Skin," where the young man had the was holding the wallet on the stoop and got shot 19 times.
I just want to say one thing. I can't say it all by a long shot from this article, but go to the internet and read theatlantic.com. It's the January-February issue. There's a lot of good information in there, and I couldn't express it adequately. But I think that anybody who reads it will find it. It's got a lot of good thought material.
Another thing about statistics, I know Gary knows and Mike know a lot about this, is the impact of guns on the murder rate and stuff. The NRA has basically forced the government not to gather statistics about gun violence.
Right.
And so what you get is sort of really indirect study. So there's a study out where Missouri loosens the gun laws and the murder rate goes up, shooting rate goes up. More people get hurt. But basically the NRA has kept the Center for Disease Control from doing studies about the effect of gun violence.
They threaten to take away their funding if they do.
Right. And we can't even get statistics. And this is what I think, Mike and Gary are saying about these other things. If you can't get statistics, then it's very hard to argue, and then you have very indirect arguments.
So in talking about the big stories, we are obviously, the name of the show is Democratic Perspective. We are, we do focus on the political side of things. But there are big stories in technology.
Hey, I was going to say that we didn't get to talk about drones or self-driving cars. Let's see. Hey, we didn't have to worry about ISIS today either.
There was a great story on Fareed Zakaria's show, Sunday morning show yesterday, speaking of technology, that he had an author, an economist, I believe, on the show, who's written a book called the uh, the entrepreneurial state. And she talks about how the technological innovations that we all credit to people like Steve Jobs are not, in fact, their accomplishments, but the accomplishments of the government, of government funding, of grants that, you know, the Absolutely. iPhone, for example, is the result of government funding. And in fact, the government does pick winners all of the time. And yet the government never gets credit for it. We seem to hold up on a pedestal venture capitalists, but we ignore the real motor of our economy, which is government grants.
What venture capitalists do are basically our enablers, so to speak. And if we didn't have the technology for them to bring about these things, that's great. So you need both of those things.
Absolutely. But the biggest driver is by far the government.
All right. You need the private sector to do original things, even when the government is behind a lot of the basic research and stuff People don't know that, but it's just true.
Well, nearly the one last thing is we haven't talked about global warming. We're probably not going to. It's something which is happening over time.
You talk about the big story that makes us all go away, or at least changes civilization as we know it. Yeah, I would say that was a big story.
Republicans are in almost universal denial.
Yeah.
Well, less now, but yes. Maybe,
the candidates.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So anyway, we can't say much about it. It'll get worse, and that's it.
Well, there was progress in France with 177 countries, Gary, something like that, meeting and agreeing.
195.
195. Agreeing to cut emissions. We did a show on it, and that's a good start. When we did the show, we were really positive about it, but understand, wonderful as it was, it has to be implemented to really work.
Right.
That's the issue.
As far as I'm concerned, the stories, you know, for the 20th, seventh year, Obama, the most admired man in the world, for the 20th year, Hillary Clinton, most admired woman in the world, and yet these guys can't get the respect here that they can get in the rest of the world. Now, we got in our 10 or 15 minutes left, predictions.
We want to talk about the Republican and Democratic campaigns, predictions, who's going to win. And
Bernie Sanders is going to win and be assassinated.
Well, there's shock.
Yeah, there you go, Mike.
Shock and awe.
All right. Let's go to Gary. Gary, all right. There's, in the Democratic primary, there's three people still in it. Yeah. O'Malley.
Yes.
Hillary Clinton.
Yep.
And Bernie Sanders. And Mike is a fervent Bernie Sanders supporter, right?
Well, I'm like a lot of the studies show that a lot of Sanders, yes, I am. The Sanders supporters, are perfectly fine with Hillary. And so I belong to that camp. I'm a Sanders supporter, but I will accept middle of the road Republican light, Hillary Clinton as president. I think it'd be great to have a woman. I would be fascinated to find out who she'd pick as a running mate. Don't forget, in this country, we now, and it hasn't always been this way, vice president and vice president run together.
Bernie Sanders.
I don't know how that would work. That's an interesting, that should be topic for a whole show.
My predictions, Iowa is, even though I was born and raised in Iowa, I think the caucuses there are kind of immaterial. It's a training ground for candidates.
It's ridiculous because it's all the very, very, very most conservative Republicans. It's a tiny, tiny group of people selecting it.
Corporate media.
The state of Iowa is very moderate, but it has the Republicans there are totally controlled by evangelicals in the northwest part of the state. So,
and they've adopted Cruz, right?
Right.
As their candidate.
So the far right
politicized evangelicals. We say, because many evangelicals are not really that politically fervent. They have politics like everybody else.
They were originally supporters of Carson. They've now switched to Cruz. I predict that Cruz will win the Iowa caucuses, but it won't matter. And I predict that it will be a close race in the Democratic caucuses between Hillary and Sanders.
What about long-term, Gary?
New Hampshire, I think, is where everything is going to be told.
Right.
That's an actual primary.
Much more predictive.
If Cruz wins the caucuses in Iowa and wins the primary in New Hampshire, then he will be very difficult to stop.
So you think Cruz might be the nominee?
Yeah, I do, but I don't think he'll win New Hampshire. So I think it'll be a very hard-fought, long race. I think the same is true of the Democrats, is that Sanders will win New Hampshire.
He's from Vermont, which is right next to New Hampshire, and they're both very small.
And he'll win New Hampshire, and as a result of that, it will be a very long, drawn-out battle between he and Hillary.
What do you think, Mike? What's your prediction for next year? Republicans? Talk about Republicans? Talk about Democrats? What do you think?
Well, Cruz or Rubio, yeah, for sure.
You think it'll be Cruz instead of Rubio?
Yeah, I do.
But Cruz is, of all the politicians in the United States, somebody said they've yet to find anybody who likes the man. I mean,
well,
he's
really deeply hated.
And the story is that Cruz stands up and introduces a resolution. Now, seconding a resolution doesn't even mean you're going to support it. It means you're supporting the process.
Yeah.
So he puts up this resolution. Nobody stands up. Nobody supports it.
Yeah, yeah.
He's standing before an entire Senate, Republican and Democrat, and no one will get up and support him because he's deeply hated by
everybody.
That's a
good point, and that matters. You're right. And taking that kind of thing into consideration, then I've changed my prediction to something else.
what do you think it matters? If it matters, how? Dick, what do you think?
And you
and Mike, what do you think?
Not very much. But I guess I would defer to your thoughts. Okay, let's say if Cruz is the Republican candidate, then I think Hillary's going to eat him up because people it's basically a situation is that people begin to think seriously when they finally get down to the final vote. And I think the American psyche is such that they would go more for Hillary's philosophy.
Yeah. Cruz is one of the most unlikable, disliked people in the entire United States government, I think, in decades. The most hated people by his own party.
Can they
turn him into this sweet, lovable guy who everybody will vote for?
I don't know much about Cruz. All I know is what I hear about him.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a Cruz birther.
Yeah.
What's a Cruz birther?
Well, they've made so much out of Obama's birth certificate, although he's clearly born in Hawaii and raised in Kansas.
Republicans, facts don't matter. That's why I say when Obama's trying to argue with them with the facts about what he's doing in Syria and Iraq,
right,
it makes no difference because what they do is hate. What they want is carpet bombing, immediate solutions, and so forth.
But Cruz was born in Canada.
Hey, one thing about the Tea Party people, a lot of them do not want to go into, like, Syria. That's one of the things in the surveys, these people, they are not the aggressive individuals, so to speak, that want to go and solve all the problems of the world.
We should try to discuss, because the neoconservatives, Dick, are still in power in Washington.
They're really pissed
off at Obama for not going into Syria.
Well, and I think they're going to lose on that one because I've had a lot of very conservative people say, "Hey, we solve everybody else's problems but our own."
Even Robert Robb, as I like to call him, Bob Robb, the columnist for the Arizona Republican.
They changed the name, Gary, a few years ago to Arizona Republic.
But it didn't change the content.
I just said they changed the name.
But even Rob in yesterday's paper had a compliment for Obama's handling of ISIS, saying that it appears that his strategy is actually working.
Well, this is the point. I respect his opinions because he doesn't drag in a lot of extraneous information.
That's right.
I think that's important. I don't agree with all of his views, but at least he doesn't do a lot of ad hominem arguments.
Okay, so we think that you guys think. I think it's still going to be Rubio. I don't know why I think it's going to be Rubio, because I think people are going to. I think Republicans are take one look at Cruz, and he's such a nasty
Rubio,
blankety blank.
Well, okay. Rubio will be the compromise.
Yeah, and it seemed to me, and somebody said, "Well, you Democrats have always thought it's going to be Rubio, based on exactly what?"
The money class like him too.
That's basically it. We think he's going to emerge. Many Democrats say he's going to, and Republicans think he's going to emerge, because if you look at the last election, the guy with the most money, Romney, in the end got the nomination, and the people with all the fundamentalist support didn't go anywhere.
The people in this room know that Cubano is not a Latino, but I'm not sure everybody knows that. In other words, Cubans, although they may speak Spanish, are not necessarily considered in the Latino class, because they are a class all by themselves. So Rubio's Cuban roots aren't going to be as helpful, I think, as some handlers think it will be in a...
I suspect you're right, because there's a certain amount of resentment of all the special regulations for Cuban, all the stuff that... other Hispanic folks have to go through to get into the country.
They were the illegal immigrants that were welcomed, where the people from Mexico and Central America were not.
And while the food is good, it's not as good as Mexican food.
Is Jeb Bush last year's news?
Well, I don't know. I just read about his 6-point strategy to get back into the race yesterday. And
what do you think?
It could be effective. On the other hand, if... You know, once they're done with you, maybe they're done with you. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm still, but
I don't know quite how the moneyed class works with politics. They pick candidates, and if it's sort of like a horse race, if you're not doing well, they kind of bail out, and they don't want to tell you they're bailing out, but they shift their funds to somebody else. I don't see where sane Republicans can shift their money to say, except to somebody like Rubio, who's a very, very far right wing guy. Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of predictions, by the way, that the Republican process will go to a real convention where the nominee will be selected. There will be no real favorite going into it.
An old-fashioned convention where the nominee is selected at the convention,
right,
rather than just a fashion show.
An announcement. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we've got 2 minutes left. Gary, who's going to be the Republican and Democratic nominees?
As I said, I think Cruz, but Rubio could be a compromise at the end, and I think it will be a very hard fought battle between Hillary and Sanders, but I think Hillary will probably win.
Mike,
Rubio and Sanders.
Dick, what do you think?
I think it's going to be Rubio and Hillary.
All right, so we're at least thinking about this process, and we've got a considerable amount of time to watch this play out. I must say, this is the ugliest Republican primary I've ever seen. Everything is generated by violent feelings, envy, anger. You don't see an element of rationality. You don't see an element of community or anything else going on.
Let us remind our listeners and our viewers here that the presidential preference primary in Arizona is March 19th. You have to be, so far, registered as a Republican or a Democrat to be able to vote.
Do you think that's a good idea, Mike?
Topic for another show.
Okay.
No. A part of me says no, but as a party loyalist, I might have to say yes. How's that for talking out of both sides of my mouth? We want to say howdy to our good friends at Democrats of the Red Rocks, and thank them for their support.
Supporters like Dick Searle in the studio this morning.
I want to announce that Democrats of the Red Rocks are having their annual meeting Sunday, January 10th at 5 p.m. at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church in Sedona.
Yes, if you're a member, come. And if you're not a member, come. Leave your weapons at home, please. We have Democrats of the Verde Valley in this election year maybe going to get revived. Please, please, please listen to all our podcasts, all our old shows on VVID.org, VVID.org has our old shows. You can listen to us on the internet at TuneIn. Put in KAZM 780 and you will find our radio show live over the internet in case, you know, you don't have a radio that works anymore.
Thank you for listening, folks. We'll be back next time.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.